Congratulations, another win. That was a nice win yesterday.
Coach.
Yeah, it was good. Fred? Steven? Yeah.
So we got a lot to talk about with the game, but let me do it right off the top of the program here, because you've heard the story, as everybody else has. Randy Moss waived by the Minnesota Vikings. You have any interest in picking him up off the waiver wire if it comes down to your team?
Yeah, I can't comment on any of other teams' transactions or players. We can't do that, so.
Let me ask you this. Would you have any adversity to bringing back a Randy Moss if the opportunity presented itself?
Glenn, you know I can't. I mean, you can bait the hook with whatever you want to put
on. He's good, though, isn't he?
I'm working it here, Bill.
I can't talk about another team's transactions or their players or anything like that. I can't do that.
All right, let me take names out of it, and let me ask you about the waiver wire and how it works. If a player, any named player, Steve Diassi, is suddenly put on waivers.
Again.
There's a 24-hour period in which teams can make a claim on him, and they would be responsible for the rest of his entire pay, correct?
The contract goes with the player,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
Whatever the terms are, those could vary, but okay. Whatever the terms of that particular contract are, yeah.
If you're claimed off the waiver wire.
Right. What happens if nobody claims them during that 24-hour period? How does the system work from that point on?
Well, if a player's not claimed, he's just like any other player that's not in the league. He's a free agent, so he can do whatever he wants to do.
So he could negotiate with any team he wants. He could have two or three teams bidding for his services then.
Absolutely.
And he would get paid that money. Would that be subtracted from the money that the Jets or Giants, whatever team you've played for, would be responsible for?
Well, there are a lot of rules that govern contracts, and those rules are, first of all, pertinent to the player's vesting, how many years he's been in the league, and so forth. So it's not the same for every player. It would depend on his the number of years that he's accrued seasons that he's had in the league, and so forth. So it each situation is a little bit different depending on what category the player fell into.
Say he's 10-plus years.
Say the guy's been around for a long time.
So a vested player is, if he gets cut halfway through the season, the team that he got cut from is liable for the rest of his salary.
Well, the players, depending on what their status was at the beginning of the season, there's a number of rules involved.
Right.
But, you know, generally speaking, a player that's been with a team that's a vested player at a certain point in the year would earn his entire salary.
What point is that? How many games?
Again, it depends on what...
What age? How many years?
You know, yeah, but, you know, either 4 or 8 games.
So 4 if he's been in 10 years?
Depending on what his status is at the beginning of the year, there's a number of rules involved. I mean, I'm trying to give you a runaround, Fred, but I mean, there's a lot of rules involved.
You don't
here.
Have to run too fast. You're already past us. But, so let's say he's out there and teams start bidding, and someone grabs him. He's a total free agent, and they negotiate with, let's say, Buffalo, and he's guaranteed $5 million, and they offer him 2. Does that come off if he's vested and guaranteed a salary? Does that come off the amount of money that Buffalo has to pay?
Again, it would depend on the specific terms of the player's contract.
So it's hard to double dip then. It'd be hard for a guy to be paid 2 contracts at one time.
Well, depending on what the guarantees in the contract are, that's right.
Right.
All right, so I know you can't talk about another team's player in that respect. Can I ask you whether you were surprised to hear the news today that he was waived by the Vikings?
I mean, honestly, I'm kind of, you know, you're telling me about it. I heard about it a few minutes ago. I mean, I don't even know if it's true, so I don't know.
Did you see the tribute he gave to you last night on the team? I mean, he talked about how much he missed it.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to Randy after the game as well. And look, Randy and I had a long conversation a few weeks ago. I mean, I have a lot of respect for him, and I appreciate everything that he did for us. And he basically said the same thing to me, so the feeling's mutual.
So they're on. It doesn't seem, based on what he said yesterday, and you know, I know people read a lot into the hugs, and we're not going to do that. You know, the hugs every week that you give, but there seems to be mutual admiration, and doesn't seem to be any hard feelings based on what transpired here 4 weeks ago. Is that safe to say?
Well, I wouldn't speak for anyone else. I'm just speak for myself.
For yourself, yourself.
Well, I told you how I feel.
Yeah.
Well, Glenn, he went on for a while about how great the players were and how much he missed Matt. have missed Boston. And the question is, does he still, according to what you ran, command that type of respect out there? You guys seem to be running multitude of coverages to keep the ball from getting to him.
Yeah. Well, again, Fred, as we change the as we the change
bait,
the bait,
is that a good curveball?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Really not. Yeah. You know, it's again, I really can't comment on other teams' players. Yeah.
Can we talk about yesterday's game then, in the respect of where he was out there? We saw Telly Banta came. We saw you give him some different looks underneath stuff, deeper stuff. Obviously, you had the safety coming over there on top. Certainly you played him, would you say, the way a lot of teams played him when he was playing here for the Patriots?
Well, we tried to mix it up yesterday. I think most teams mix it up from time to time. I mean, if you want to, Minnesota's a hard team to defend. They have a lot of good skill players. They obviously have a very good running back and running game and a very big offensive line. So, you know, you're challenged by the running game. You're challenged by the skill players that they have at tight end, at wide receiver, and, of course, at running back and at quarterback for that matter, too. So I don't think you want to necessarily play the same thing all day against that group, or they have too many guys that can kill you. I mean, you could take maybe one thing away, maybe, but then you have to deal with everything else. So I think, I don't see one team, any team really playing Minnesota just one way. They have too many weapons. They have too many things you have to worry about. And I would put us in that category too. We tried to change up a little bit and not always do the same thing.
But the interesting thing about Minnesota, they can punch in the mouth with Peterson, and they can go finesse with the receivers. And Favre, I thought, played his controlled game yesterday. He wasn't making crazy passes. He was within the parameters of the offense. But dealing with him, playing as well as he did, and then playing Peterson, that's a difficult change-up when you can run at you and pound you and then go play action and hit a soft pass.
Well, sure, and we know they can go deep, which they did with Percy, they did with Randy, and then they can throw underneath. And, you know, they have catch-and-run plays with their screens and their crossing patterns to Harvin. Or, you know, Harvin caught that slip screen and broke it back across the field. So it's not only the players, it's also a variety of plays that they run. Where they go vertically down the field, they run crossing and over routes, they run short catch and run plays, and then, again, you have to defend the running game and all the other plays that go with it. Not necessarily that they run them all in one game, but you don't know that. You still have to defend the reverses and so forth, and so those plays are part of things you have to account for on defense. I mean, you don't know they're not going to run them.
When you're playing an offense that's that varied, is the inclination to try to just keep Brett Favre in the pocket, especially knowing that he was going to be hobbled a little bit? Is that...
Well, I think fundamentally you probably want to keep just about every quarterback in the pocket. The worst thing is when quarterbacks extend the play and now you have a longer play. And, of course, that's where really two of the big plays yesterday came from, was when Favre got out of the pocket, had extra time, and he hit Peterson on that corner route in short yardage, and then he got out and hit the and hit the middle read there after we had gone up 21-10. So, you know, those kind of plays where he has extra time to throw, can really see the field, separate, and then, fire it in there, those are dangerous plays. I don't think you ever really want that to happen.
Going to Tom Brady's one, you're just talking about quarterback. When he looked at Tate, and I couldn't see where he saw him, then spun out on the touchdown, then had a linebacker coming at him, what textbook is that play in? How do you draw that up?
You know, that
how
was,
many quarterbacks can do that?
That was a heck of a play by Tom and a great adjustment by Brandon. Edwards kind of came through. We had pretty good protection to start with on the play, and then as the play went on and we had to hold the ball a little bit, Edwards came through and looked like he either dove or stumbled right at the last minute, and Tom was able to escape him and scramble out a little bit to his left, and then spin around and do a pirouette and then fire it down there to Tate. And Brandon did a great, made a nice catch and did a great job after he beat Allen to cut back and run past Madu Williams for the touchdown. So that's not the way we drew it up.
Was that a predetermined? I mean, when quarterback's in trouble, lower tier guys come forward and some guy's supposed to break for the goal line. Did they tell him if Tom's in trouble, read the safety and break off it?
Well, I think, you know, fundamentally a receiver knows if he's in a shorter zone and the quarterback pumps the ball at him, if he was open, he would throw it to him. So, and when he pumps it to him, he's basically telling the receiver, you're not open, I can't throw you the ball, which, again, instinctively, a good receiver would just turn that up, you know, assuming that there wasn't a guy behind him running a pattern that was over the top of him, and he'd be running right into the next guy. But if he was out there by himself, then, you know, he knows the quarterback's in trouble and he's open, they throw it to him. But if the quarterback doesn't throw it to him, then he just assumes that there's somebody else right there, and so I'll take it upfield and try to uncover that way.
Running game in the second half was big. You were able to control the clock. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis had himself a tremendous second half. I noticed in watching the game today that Algie Crumpler seemed to come up with some huge blocks to open up holes for him. How much of that was by design? Did you change anything? Because he constantly seemed like he was in motion, and he would be the one that would lead for that opening for Ben.
Well, we did motion Algie some, and we tried to just stay balanced to run to the, you know, we would kind of overload the formation and sometimes run to that overload, sometimes come back in the middle, and then sometimes come back all the way to the backside of it. So we were just trying to stay balanced up so they wouldn't know exactly where we were going on that. But Algie was at the point of attack on a number of plays. I mean, he does a good job, as did the other, you know, overall our line. It's a good front, as we know, very good front. Mm-hmm. Henderson's an excellent middle linebacker. He's a very good tackler, and so you've got to do a good job of keeping those guys. It's hard because you got to keep them from penetrating, but at the same time, if you overplay the penetration and they stunt from side to side, which they do, then it's easy to miss them that way too. So even though it looks like they're going forward, they don't always go forward. Sometimes they shoot the gap, and then other times you think they're going to shoot the gap, and they shoot sideways, and you miss them. So they're a tough group.
Your defense seems to have made progress almost every week. Still giving up a good chunk of yardage, but doing a pretty good job in terms of controlling the points. Is there anything in particular you can point to that your defense is doing better than they were in the first few games?
I think we're doing a lot of things better. I think we still have, you know, a long way to go, but you know, we're definitely better in the red area. I mean, that's been more competitive, and on the goal line, even though we've had a couple of touchdowns scored against us like yesterday, it's competitive. I mean, at least it's close. You know, I think our third down defense is improving. It's definitely not where we want it to be yet, but it's getting better. I think we're having better coordination between our rush and our coverage and being on the receivers a little tighter. So we're fortunate we've been able to get some turnovers. We didn't have a lot yesterday, but we've had, you know, pretty good success turning the ball over through the course of the season. So we, you know, really need to keep working on that. But really just more consistency all the way across the board, from the, you know, the coaching staff to the players to the techniques, where we can just keep doing things and get better at them, and not, you know, not change everything from week to week where we've got to relearn a bunch of new stuff, but where we can build on what we've done in the past to a point. I mean, you still have to defend what they're doing, but that's, you know, we're probably doing a little more of that.
Going back to the offense, you got a little guy named Woodhead. When a crunch time was, it was the third down and long, fourth quarter, Tom throws it to him in the middle, and he avoids two or three guys and finds similar style of Falk. You know, he's tough in the middle, mm-hmm. He's tough to dodge. I mean, to throw the ball to this kid in a crucial situation, for him to come through like that is pretty remarkable.
Well, it was a play where, you know, Tom was under a lot of pressure. He found Woody sneaking through the line there, and then Danny made a real good run. You know, one of our emphasis points going into the game was that our skill players needed to make some yards on their own. You know, we can't block everybody, and in order to have successful plays or big plays, we would have to, the backs or the tight ends or the receivers, whoever had the ball, would have to break tackles or elude players or do something to gain some extra yards, and Woody did a great job of it on that play. He, you know, he cut back, he broke the tackle by the corner, kind of spun off the safety, and, you know, was able to pick up the first down. But it was very good running on his part. The play really didn't have the yardage that we needed, but he made it on his own with good running. So there were several of those. You know, Ben Jarvis had several runs like that, and of course Tate on the long pass, you know, turned that into a touchdown by getting past the safety. So That was the receiver. The skill players did a good job of that yesterday. They got a lot of yards on their own.
You talk about Ben. They call him Benny, but they call him a lot of them. It's too long to say that all the time.
Benny. Yeah.
Benny, he has that forward lean. I mean, he sees the hole. He doesn't dance. You know, some guys jump up and dance. He hits the hole that's laid out for him, and he gets what he can very seldom. But that forward lean, and he has pretty good speed. I mean, this guy has been a very big surprise. But his running style with your offense, getting that positive yardage, not dancing around for a few, he's been a big benefit. And obviously the offensive linemen know where he's coming and are comfortable keeping those blocks for him.
Right. Well, he's done a good job of that all year. In fact, I think since he's been here, really, all 3 years, he's done a good job of that. He moves forward. He's got good power. And he doesn't take a lot of losses. You know, if we lose yardage, it's usually because somebody hits him in the backfield and he doesn't really have a chance to get going. But if he can get to the line of scrimmage, he can, you know, get some momentum in there, and he makes good decisions. He's got good vision, can find some space, find an opening, and can make positive yards. And overall, he does a real good job of that.
Defensively, are they dropping? Seems like they seem rushing 3 and 4 more than blitzing, dropping more men in the coverage the last couple of weeks. Is that more prominent? Or is it not as much pressure but more coverage?
I'd say we see both. We see both.
Hasn't changed that much?
We saw a decent amount of pressure yesterday. A little bit of three-man rush, but a lot more four-man rush. I mean, I would say, you know, very little three-man rush. A couple of times in some sub situations on third down when they had their 3-3 nickel in there. But for the most part, it was four-man rush. A decent amount of pressure from the secondary and from the linebackers.
Goal line situation with Tom up the middle on the first two plays. I take it you were working the clock and not necessarily looking to score. I remember you did it in Buffalo a couple of years ago. How dangerous is that in a six-point? It was a six-point game at the time, right? 6 points at
three.
The time?
Three-point
game at the
it
time.
It would have been six if they kicked the
six
field goal.
Six if you kick the field goal now, and then they can come down the field and score a touchdown. How much pressure does it put on you for that third down situation to be able to score in that third down situation? Big difference between seven and getting three there in a three-point game.
Yeah, it really was. That was a tough situation. I think to manage, because you don't want to give them any more time than you can, but you want to score. So trying to put all that together, we just felt like the way that we handled it would give us the best chance to maximize all the things we were trying to do. And you never know how it's going to work out. There were certainly other ways we could have approached it. And had Ben Jarvis scored on the run and not gotten knocked out of bounds on the one-yard line, that would have taken care of it right there. So we could easily have been in that situation anyway. But we just kind of talked about our options and wanted to run the plays and the looks that we felt like would, based on what they were doing in the situation, would be able to benefit us.
Shows a lot of faith in your offensive line and your running back. Is that part of the equation?
Sure. You got to have confidence in everybody out there anyway. Right. So, but they did a good job on the goal line play. We really had pretty good space in there, and Benny jumped up and got it in. But that was pretty well blocked, and we had good movement at the point of attack. There was good hole there to run.
Is that decision based on? You have that play that you really feel comfortable you can score, so I'm confident in eating up some time.
Well, certainly the play is always an important thing. You know, if you don't have a good play, then I think you're concerned about what you're going to have to call, what you're going to have to do. I think if you feel real good about your play and the personnel group that you have out there running it and so forth, then it makes it a lot easier for you to say, okay, this is what we're going to do in this situation, and we feel confident about it, whether it's weighted down or whatever.
If you get another seven up on the scoreboard, it's probably easier to make that decision and say, we'll just waste out the clock.
No anxiety, though? No anxiety about not trying to slam it home on first or second down? I mean, isn't there some because I know, I guarantee the fans and people watching on TV, there was some anxiety there. There's got to be a little feeling of anxiety in that situation. No,
I'm not saying we weren't, we weren't trying to make some yardage.
Were you sweating, Bill?
Right. I just know
I was soaked.
I think I think the most important thing to me was really not trying to lose yardage. You know, I don't think you want to go from the one end up back there on the four. So being on the one's one thing, being on the fours, you know, is another. So,
right. If you didn't get in on third down, would there have been any thought about going on fourth down or just automatically kick the field goal?
Well, I think fourth down would have depended a little bit on third down. You know, there's a lot of information that we would have gotten from that third down play and what we had to work with on fourth down. So,
not out of the question then.
No, I wouldn't say out of the question.
The Peterson touchdown, now that you've had an opportunity to see it, I still don't believe he crossed that goal line. And they seem like they really had a pretty good angle at this one to be able to look at it. Were you kind of surprised that one was not overturned?
I was a little bit because when I saw the replays, both at the game and then after the game,
they were wrong.
You don't really get a good look at the ball, which is the problem, because I think that's the reason why Walt Anderson didn't overturn it, was because he couldn't see the ball. So, but it doesn't look like there's very much that crosses the plane. So I thought the play was, you know, well defended. We did a good job up front. We got good penetration, and you know, Jermaine Cunningham did a good job. Obviously, Mayo going over the top made a big hit on him. So there was a lot of good elements.
Vince had his eye on the ball too. Yeah. Vince, yeah.
He
grabbed the
pull. Held the ball from going on. Now, yeah. If they had overturned yours at the other end, you might have been a little bit upset, especially after they let that one go. No.
Well, at least you could see the ball in the end zone,
right?
In Ben Jarvis's play, mm-hmm. But you know, whether he was down before that, I mean, it's obviously what they were looking at. So,
McCourty's
a close call.
McCourty's play on Harvin.
Be
able to, we stripped the ball on him. To be able to strip the ball at a rookie, and you keep on talking about how quickly he's picked it up and how smart he is. You know, how instinctive is that for a young guy to say, okay, he's made the catch. Now I still have an opportunity here on the play, because it happened so quickly. And I thought that might have been the turning point in the entire game.
Well, it was a huge play in the game, no question about it. And Devin's very good at that. He has great awareness of the ball. If you remember back to the first preseason game against New Orleans when they were down on the 2-3 yard line and they ran the ball in there, and he stripped it out on that and did a great job of causing the fumble right there on the goal line as New Orleans was about to score. So he has a knack for that and certainly is looking for it. He's, you know, been well coached at Rutgers with Coach Schiano. And I know that's something that they work on a lot. But you can really see him doing it. It's one thing to do in a drill. It's another thing to kind of have the presence to do it in game situations. And Devin does an excellent job of that. And he does a lot in practice, too. He knocks a lot of balls out of receivers and running backs' hands in practice as we're not tackling, but you can still kind of swipe and hit at the ball. And he does a nice job of that.
All right, Cleveland's up next Sunday in Cleveland. We're going to get to that coming up next with the coach right here on Patriots Monday, live from Gillette. Back down here live at Gillette Stadium, I'm Glenn Ordway. Fred Stever here. Bill Belichick, our weekly Monday session with the coach here on Patriots Monday. Cleveland coming up Sunday. Matter of fact, you've got two road games coming up, Cleveland and then Pittsburgh the week after that.
Yeah, we're going into the Rust Belt.
Yeah, you sure are. Cleveland, surprise you in what they did in New Orleans here. They've been off. They've had the bye week this past week, but a week and a half ago here.
They played seven games this year, and they lost to Pittsburgh, and they dominated New Orleans, and then all the other games have been one-possession games. But they played a lot of good teams, you know, teams that are winning. Of course, Atlanta, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, New Orleans. You know, they played a really good schedule, a lot of good teams, and really every game's come down to the last possession other than them dominating the Saints. So that was an impressive game, and then, you know, we saw New Orleans last night look pretty good against Pittsburgh, so it's kind of scary. But the Browns are, you know, they're a good football team. They play everybody tough, and they're getting a lot of weapons, very potent team, you know, offense, defense, special teams, and got a big challenge ahead of us this week. As you said, they have the extra week to prepare. They're way ahead in their preparations. You know, we're kind of just getting started, and they've already had, you know, however many days they put into it, so we got a lot of catching up to do.
How's the young quarterback look down there?
Well, he's making good decisions and
pretty mobile.
Yeah, mobile, active, accurate. You know, he manages the game well. I mean, he won a lot of games in college, and I don't think the game's too big for him. I think he's got good poise and a good presence on the field, and you know, they seem to have a lot of confidence in him. Really, it looks like they have confidence in all their quarterbacks. So, I mean, Seneca Wallace and Dahom, they play confidently with whoever's in there, so there's a little depth at that position for him.
You see the Mike Holmgren fingerprint starting to take a form down there?
Well, you know, Mike's certainly had a big influence in the organization. I think that they've had a real good draft this year. Their players that they took this in the 2010 draft, you know, a lot of those guys are contributing for him. They don't have a lot of contributors off the 09 group, a couple, but this group looks pretty good, and you know, Mike and Tom Heckert and his staff there obviously did a good job in selecting these guys.
Cleveland was always a difficult place to play. Is it still that tough with their lack of success lately?
Well, you know, we were there in 07, but it was tough for us, and we were there in 2000. And then we played them here a couple times. So I mean, you know, look, those fans love football. I mean, it's where the Hall of Fame is. It's where, you know, great football traditions in high school and all the colleges in Ohio, the Mid-American Conference, and, of course, Ohio State and so forth. And so it's really a football state. Cleveland's a football city, and fans are knowledgeable. They're very passionate, and they don't like anybody coming in there. I mean, they don't like a lot of things. They definitely don't like anybody playing their Browns.
Right.
So
I'm
expecting a warm welcome.
Yeah, imagine.
What type of defense they run? They're blitzing. We haven't seen them that much, obviously. We're not team.
Well,
watching.
Rob Ryan's their defensive coordinator, and they definitely press you. I mean, they're a 3-4 base team with a number of pressures and, you know, some kind of exotic pressures, similar to some of the things that we've seen in the past from the Jets. So where they walk guys around, blitz safeties and corners and they give you some different looks. So, I mean, they're kind of a game plan team. They don't do the same thing against everybody. They pick out what they think your weakness is, and we'll try to exploit that.
You still get a special reaction from the fans there in Cleveland? Most of those fans died off by now?
Sure. You know, I think everybody gets pretty much the same treatment there. You know, you come in there, you get close to that dog pound, they're woofing away at you. They support their team. You know, they're out there to support their team, and if you're not a Brown, then you won't get much support.
Is it one of the louder teams in the league? I mean, I knew they were all.
Yeah, it is. Well, the stadium's right on top of you. Yeah. I mean, it's a big stadium. And it's right on top of you. There's really, they're close to the field.
They love
and
to
it's
yell.
High and, oh, they, yeah.
You know, the emphasis when people talk, because when you know you can influence the game, they scream louder.
Right. Well, it's certainly if you give them anything to encourage them, you know, false start penalties, turnovers. Things like that. I mean, you want to jack the crowd up, that'll do it. So
Josh
we don't want any of those.
Josh Cripps, special teams, and how much extra attention has to be applied, because he can turn an entire game around.
Right. Well, not only on special teams, but also offensively. They use him as a wildcat player and all that. I mean, Cribbs is a special player. He's big. You know, he's a big, strong kid, and so that makes him a little harder to tackle than some of the, you know, the smaller return guys that we face. So he can run through tackles and break a lot of tackles, but he's instinctive. He's got very good run skills and good speed. I mean, he's not super fast, but he's fast enough, and he's got very good strength, quickness, and as I said, can make a lot of yards on his own. So a lot of times it looks like somebody has him and they just can't get him down.
Has the learning curve that your defense is going through right now, as much as they've learned so far in the first half of the season, has that allowed you to do more things defensively?
You know, we haven't really. I don't think we've really gotten into a lot of big exotic game plans. We've tried to do what the players can do, and that varies from week to week depending on how many looks and problems we're getting from the offense. I mean, there are always problems, but you know, the multitude of them. So it's a little bit of a function of what we're facing, and how we want to try to defend it. But I think, you know, we have going against our offense every day in the spring and in training camp is really great preparation, because our offense does so many things with the empty package, the multiple tight ends, the multiple receivers, all the groups in between. That by the time you get through working against that, you pretty much have covered all the bases. So it's the things that we have to have to work against our offense, and somewhere along the line we can pull those and choose those on a weekly basis when we have similar situations or things that we want to defend in a similar way. So it's not a lot of new things that we have to put in. It's just a question of picking the ones that fit our opponent.
Would you expand it if the team was more experienced defensively? Or just only...
Well, again, I think that the basis is there. I don't think there's a lot of weeks where we come in and say, okay, here's five new things we haven't done before. We've done all those things. It's a question of which ones you want to pull for that particular game to defend your opponent based on their personnel or their schemes or what you anticipate them doing. And then a lot of times you get into the game and they're not giving you quite what you prepare for. They've changed their formations or their personnel groupings or whatever it is, and then we have to rely on something that we have in our playbook that we've run that we weren't anticipating that being a big thing that particular game, but as it's turned out, it now is an adjustment that we feel like would help us, so we can go to that. But we have a background in that defense or those calls.
How much room do you have for linebackers to change? So, you know, quarterbacks have audibles, they come out and there's a different formation. How, you know, we ran that, but do you have linebackers that can readjust the line or call a blitz or whatever? How much latitude are you giving them with that?
Well, sure, and it depends on the call. There are some calls we could play out against everything, and then there are other calls that you only want against a certain look, and if they give you something else, then you will either want to be in something else or you want to get out of that call completely and make a check and adjust to it. So I think it's a combination of all those things. Again, there's some calls you want to just be able to line up and run no matter what they're in, but there are other plays that are specific to certain situations that you want to defend, and if they give you that situation, then you want to be in this defense. But if it's not that formation or that situation, then you maybe don't want to be in it. So all those are part of our defensive system.
You're going to face another former Patriot this week in Ben Watson. We heard it all week long with Randy talking about giving the coaches an opportunity and knowing something about the plays and what's going on. That's not my question. The question is, the first time around, when you're seeing a guy who used to be with your organization, because they do have some familiarity with what you are doing out there, do you find that they're a little bit more motivated, that maybe they want to prove something, they want to show something, they want to say, hey, you know what, you should have held on to me, or, you know, maybe I could have been the guy you wanted to be. Do you see that the first time?
Oh, sure. I think, but again, we see that. I mean, it happens every week. I think we see it every week. But, yeah, we have players and coaches that have been in other organizations, and even when you play that team, I think it's a little something extra there. But it's pretty common. You know, we have guys that have been with a lot of different teams, and it seems like we play somebody every week that's we've had, or you know, there's some connection to, or one way or the other. So
who doesn't?
I think
though?
That's right. I mean, it's fairly normal, but you know, is there?
Well, it's
a little,
human nature, isn't it? Yeah. Just to kind of prove, you know.
But Bill, what don't they see that they see in films, breaking down your tendencies and everything you run? They virtually know. You just change up maybe where you'd run something with a certain tendency.
Right. Well, I think what a lot of people don't understand is, in practice, when we work against each other, in training camp and in all the spring practices, you know, we're out there going against each other every day. So if our offense makes the same call and our defense makes the same call, then after a period of time, you know, our offense knows our defensive calls better than our defense does. As soon as they hear a certain word, then they do this. Yeah. So you have to have dummy calls, or you have to have terms that two terms that mean the same thing, or a term that you use, but one time it means something, one time it doesn't. I mean, that's just to work against yourself in practice. I mean, otherwise, the other side of the ball would know what you're doing on every play. So those guys can pick that up. So you're kind of forced to do that anyway. I really don't think it's that big of a deal, because we have a much harder time with our offense against our defense as opposed to our offense against some other defense that doesn't see us every day.
You know, when I came here, we played Buffalo, and they had the audible Zeta was first count, and then it was Jonesy, blah, blah, blah. So they called Zeta, and first audible. I fly off the ball. I nail Kelly. I'm on the ground. He's laughing. I said, he changed it up. Of course he got me offside. Sure. But they'll change it up slightly like that.
You spent your whole career in Buffalo being offside. So
no, I wasn't. I was cheated. Those refs.
I wonder what made Kelly think he could actually pull you
off. I said, dude, I'm trying to make a living. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. You went to the hard count yesterday, and I didn't see the movement on your own player. I don't know where they
saw that.
Did I call
that?
Yeah, I don't know where they saw that.
Yeah, no, I think.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I think it was a good call. I think we flinched. Yeah.
Was it a good call when Welk was going across the middle and the linebacker tackled him 4 yards before the ball got there? I don't have to answer that.
All right, time right now for the today's coach's question of the week, brought to you by AutoTrader.com. Now compare new and used cars side by side at AutoTrader.com, the ultimate automotive marketplace and proud partner of Patriots football. I'll throw this one out to you. I've heard you guys say over and over again, anytime a situation comes up, oh, we've worked on that, so we were ready for it. And I know on Fridays you go through all of these situational things. I hate to bring up Fred's line, but you've been in this business for a few years here, Bill. Have you ever come up with a situation in which you sit there and you say, oh, bleep, this is a new one. We've never come up with this one in the middle of a game.
Well, sure. And even though you practice the situations, at times, if you just change, like, here's the situation, and that's okay, we know what we're going to do here. But now you just change the situation a little bit, add a few seconds, subtract a few seconds, add a point, subtract a point, and just change it a little bit. Then that starts to get the wheels turned a little bit. Now, this is what we would do here. Is that really what we want to do? No, that it is, but this isn't quite the situation we're looking for, and then you have to make a little adjustment to that. So we've had a couple of those this year. I mean, we have them every year, and, you know, we have our plays for certain situations, but sometimes when the situation is just a little bit different than what you're practicing it for, then, you know, you have to find a way to adapt to it. And that's fairly common on offense, defense, and special teams. And that's part of what we do when we go through our situations on Friday. We look at the film of other teams that are in those situations, and we say, okay, what would we do? But then what really gets the wheels turning again is, okay, let's say it's this, but now just let's change that, and instead of there being 5 seconds, let's say there's 9 seconds. You know, now you have time for another play instead. So what would that do? And so, you know, sometimes we go, hey, we do this, and then sometimes it's, this isn't quite what we would want in this situation. So we, you know, maybe we have to make a, you know, change a route or change a technique or something to say, hey, if it's A, it's this. If it's B, then it's not quite that. We have to change it.
All right, Coach.
It's fun. You know, yeah. It really is.
No, I can imagine.
And you know, when the whole team sits there and we watch a situation, we put ourselves on both sides of it. Even though we're watching, ourselves, let's say, on offense, we now on defense become the other team's defense. Okay,
right.
What if we were the defense in this situation? What would we do? So it's a good process to just get everybody thinking.
Well, I can tell you, you've got to be thorough with that. I can't tell you how many times I've heard players say that, mm-hmm. You know, when a situation come up and they're asked a question after the game, oh, no, we worked on that. Yep. We worked on that situation, you know?
Well, it's so much easier that way, because then you get into that situation and everybody in the huddle knows, oh, okay, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
This is, you know, we know this is what we want in this situation. But sometimes the problem is that if that situation just changes a little bit, and you go to make the call and you say, no, well, we call that, but that's not quite right. And then you change the call a little bit, you thinking, okay, well, we need to do this. and then the players get the call, and they, you know, then they're not quite sure. It's like, well, geez, we thought we were going to do this. Now we got something a little bit different here, you know. And that's, you know, that can be a little bit confusing sometimes. So you got to. That's a great thing about football, though. The end of the game situations are that there's so much strategy involved, and then there's the execution of it and the technique and everything that all gets. You know, that all gets pulled together. That's why the last, you know, minute or two in the NFL is just, it's so exciting, you know, relative to the overtime where it's much less of a strategic game. It's just more of a, you know, get the ball in field goal range type of game. But at the end of the game, the timeouts, the, you know, all the different options with the kicking game and so forth, it's you know, it's what makes it a great game.
And you see a lot of mistakes made, or things in which you look back at it and say, "Oh my God, if they had done it this way instead of that way." I'm not saying with you guys,
Glenn, it's hard. It really is. It's and we spend a lot of time on that. But even after we do it, we're still, you know, there's always a little bit of gray area, and it's much harder on defense than it is on offense.
So because
on offense, you can call the play. You know, here's the protection. Here's the pass play. And we're going to run this route instead of that route. You can, but defensively, you know, you're defending a lot right. of things. You know, there's 10 seconds to go. They got the ball at midfield. Are they going to throw it into the end zone and try a Hail Mary with 10 seconds? Well, they might, but they might not. They might run, you know, a get out of bounds play, or they might run, you know, if they have a timeout, they might run another. You know, so there's four or five different things you might have to defend on defense, and it's hard to communicate all that to your defense because. You know, even though the play might be, well, they need to get out of bounds, they might say, hey, we're going to throw two in the end zone and hope we hit one of them. We're not going out of bounds. So you still got to be ready for that.
Coach, saying all that, would you like to see your ability to call, throw the flag and challenge a play under 2 minutes instead of just relying on the referees calling? That seems kind of logical.
Well, I think the way it is in the final 2 minutes is okay because I think they look at just about everything. I mean, Now, the thing about that is it slows down the game because, you know, a lot of those plays that, in my opinion, some of them don't look like they're that close or they need to be reviewed, they go back and review them and double-check them anyway, and then that kind of takes away the, you know, well, it can help or hurt you in the 2 minute, depending on what, you know, which side of that you're on. But, you know,
What's the logic of not letting you throw the flag and them do it themselves?
Because they're going to do all of them.
They do all of them now. Because they got to get it right. So why?
Well, I think the main thing is if you know the way it is now, you only have two challenges. So if those are gone in the last 2 minutes of the game, which there's a decent chance they could be, you know, now you're at the mercy of do you save a challenge for the last 2 minutes? I think you would probably want to in a close game, but you know now a play comes up in the third quarter, the fourth quarter, and you know, but at least now you know in the last 2 minutes. The game's not going to be decided because you don't have a challenge left. It was like what happened to us in the first half yesterday. You know, we used the timeout on defense, and we used a timeout on offense, and then we're out of timeouts in the middle of the second quarter. So had there been a challenge play prior to the two-minute warning in the second quarter, we'd have a timeout, so you can't challenge it.
Did you use the timeout to get a better look at that one play where you called the timeout? Because you had the red flag, you looked like you were ready to throw it out
was
there.
That the second quarter, was that
second quarter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay, right. So that was right. That was one. Actually, we had a communication issue. We didn't have things straight on defense, and then during that timeout, in looking at it, you know, decided to you know to let that one go, and then we used a timeout on defense, and then we used another timeout on offense. So right, those were the three, but. Again, at the end of the game, or at least at the end of the half, you know that those plays are reviewable in the last 2 minutes. Right. You don't have to save a timeout.
It's another decision you got to make now because everybody's rushing up if there's a questionable call, and they know it's questionable. The offense is rushing up to the line now.
Oh, sure.
Get the play off, and you've been on the sideline, haven't seen the pictures yet or haven't heard upstairs exactly what's going on. That's a tough call.
It is a tough call.
Do you waste the timeout? Because I guess it depends on how important that play is.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, really, if you waste the challenge, you could be wasting two challenges because now you could have three if you get two right. Well, if you get one wrong, then you're out of the third one, so you kind of lose two for one there. So
we're watching the Pittsburgh game yesterday, and they said, "Why did they challenge that when he didn't make it on first down?"
I did,
right,
Steve, and I did.
And I'm saying, remember the Colts game a couple years ago when McKinnon right? So all of a sudden they stop and they get 3 points out of instead of 6 points. I have seven points. That's a huge point.
Steve and I said that. So why are you wasting your time? They're a foot away and
not
they held
even
them.
A foot.
Not even a foot. Inches and they held them.
Right. Well, that's kind of the same thing on that challenge. You know, that was second down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. That was second down. So I mean, they still had potentially two more downs, but you know. Felt like if it's a scoring play, it's one you really want to consider challenging.
Those are the things that keep coaches.
Because those are points.
Those are the things that keep coaches up at night.
Yep. Right.
You can sleep well tonight.
Oh yeah.
Congratulations. We'll see you here next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks,
Coach.
Thanks, fellas.
Bill Belichick, right here on the Big Show. Quick break, and we're back.